Hello, this is Scott Wells for The Magic Word. On this podcast, Marty Hahn talks about his time in the international spotlight that he neither asked for nor wanted. It all started with a simple letter from the United States Department of Agriculture that began, "Dear members of our regulated community." It was a request to complete and submit a multi-page document detailing a disaster plan in the case of fire, flood, tornado, or other acts of God for his rabbit. Yes, his rabbit. Just one rabbit. Well, after a simple post on his Facebook page, it just went viral. And within 48 hours, he was contacted by the Washington Post, and that led to multiple television news programs and front page coverage on many newspapers and online blogs. So did all this coverage and attention lead to increased bookings for his show? Listen to this podcast and hear how working with animals impacted and still impacts his life to this day. Also, at the end of my chat with Marty, I included an excerpt of my conversation with Dr. Nicholas St. Earn, who has been a veterinarian to many magicians in Las Vegas and elsewhere. This excerpt is part of my longer chat that I had with him during the IBM convention in Phoenix in July 2013. In this podcast, the good doctor talks about some of the diseases that one can contract from birds and rabbits, plus the handling, care, and feeding of the animals that you probably use in your show. Lots of good stuff in here, which is what you can always expect from The Magic Word. Hello, this is Scott Wells for The Magic Word podcast, and today I have with me as my guest, Mr. Marty Hahn. Hey there, Marty, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you, Scott?
I'm doing very good, thank you. Actually, you're known as Marty the Magician, I guess, mostly in Branson, Missouri area, huh?
One of my many names, that's right. With my act, I always have to change my name.
Yeah, I'm sure your wife has other names for you as well, like mine does.
Oh, yes.
Some other pet names. And speaking of pets, you have a pet rabbit, just one, is that correct?
That's right. I have two doves, a rabbit. Of course, I have a chihuahua and three cats as well. But for magic uses, primarily my one bunny rabbit.
Right. Now, you said the doves. Do you use those sometimes in...
Once in a great while, not as much as I used to. At one time years ago, I actually had about eight doves in my magic act, and now I'm down to just two that are occasionally used, but not as often as I used to. Primarily just the bunny rabbit.
Were the birds mainly used like on a stage show, or did you use those also like at birthday parties?
Usually just in school assembly shows, family night shows, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. My wife, Brenda, used to work with me quite a bit in the show, and so the doves were a nice addition. And doing a one-man show, quite often I don't use doves as much as I used to. Many times I'm doing, you know, three shows a day with libraries and trying to get in and out quickly. So sometimes the doves just stay at home then and just kind of are a nice addition to the household here.
Right, and kind of a nice cooing in the background, I guess.
That's right,
kind of
yeah.
A soothing noise to kind of relax you. And so with the animals that you've used in your act, have you used animals pretty much most of your magic career?
Pretty much. The doves, actually, way back in high school, I got my first pair of doves. And then Brenton and I, we were married back in 1983, and about the time we got married, Brenda was a good old farm girl, I always called her. She grew up on a farm and always loved animals and had animals. And she said, "Hey, come on, if you're a magician, you have to have a bunny rabbit." And I said, "Well, I've never used a rabbit, never had a rabbit as a kid." And she said, "Oh, they're easy, come on." And so you know, 31 years ago, we got our first bunny rabbit and using rabbits ever since.
And have you used several, or just always had one at a time? Did you ever breed them? Or?
Many times, I would have two bunny rabbits, and due to the volume of shows I would do, we would kind of alternate every other day and have them work one day and take a day off. And the last few years now, I'm trying not to work quite as much as I have, so we've gone down to one rabbit, and that seems to be just fine, having one bunny rabbit.
Right, but you've never really had like a coop or someplace where you kept them outdoors and bred them and sold them or anything?
No, just had one or maybe at the most two rabbits just for use in the magic show.
Yep.
And here where we live, I actually keep the rabbit inside. We have a home with what they call a walkout basement, and so the rabbit's down in the basement, but there's plenty of light, and I can go out with her and let her walk out, run around on the patio and get a little exercise, you know, every day if I can. And so it works out real well for us.
Right. And you said that you have the doves, I assume, in the house then as well with you?
Yes, I do. Yes. Also down in the walkout basement.
Well, I know you're familiar with what had happened with David Oliver and his situation, and with lungs and the Dove dust and everything, and how that caused him some problems. What have you done to try to keep home healthy?
That's kind of been a little bit of concern with me as well. I've just been, I'm very aggressive with cleaning the cage every day. I don't let it go for 4 or 5 days. And mm-hmm. I'm not saying David did that. I'm just saying that that's what I do. I know people like Amos Levkovich, he would always recommend having like an aviary outside, keeping the doves outside. But I'm just trying to, just have only two doves and keep the cage as clean as possible every day and hope for the best, I guess.
When we had doves, we kept them outside as well, and I recall that it seems like every other day there were more eggs. And so what do you do with you? Do you raise those by chance, or do you get rid of the eggs?
I usually just get rid of the eggs. In fact, my doves are probably 15 years old now, and the female's just really not laying eggs very often anymore. So,
mm-hmm. Did you ever have one actually lay an egg on stage?
I think I have found an egg in a load chamber a time or two, and that is always fun. But yeah, we used to, back when I had like 8 doves, years ago. I'm talking 25 years ago. We were actually hatching the doves and raising them, which was very interesting.
Yes, same with us that we did as well. Now, that would have been, golly, back in the 80s as well. I'm going to say mm-hmm. like 81 to 85, somewhere in there. And I had a situation like with a dove that laid an egg during a show. It was interesting because after I produced the dove, that she, I later found out, kept, flying off of the perch and just sitting on the stage. And I'd pick her up and put her back on the perch 2 or 3 times. And then finally, when I did this flip-over vanish, she was gone. Then later, whenever I was cleaning it out and picked her up out of the chamber, there was an egg in there.
Yep. Oh, yeah. The doves were always a lot of fun using them. And in college, back in the late 70s, early 80s, when I was attending Kent State University, I had a Monday night gig at a restaurant. Actually, they had a small stage, so I would do a stand-up show. And back then, I was doing a Chavez-style act with cigarettes and cards and the doves. And I look back and I say, I can't believe I was brave enough to do all that stuff back then.
And were you performing for the other students there at Kent State?
I'd perform on campus. Major was radio and TV, so I was always being interviewed on various college TV programs, and just I always had magic with me. And guests would not show up on interview shows, so they would call me quickly and get over to the TV studio. We need you to be a guest, And then on Monday nights, I'd work at this restaurant and the doves. And I can remember one night producing a dove, and it got away from me and flew around the restaurant and landed right on a man's table and skidded to a stop about 3 inches away from his steak dinner, that was kind of embarrassing. And another time a dove actually flew around the entire restaurant, and I just held my hand out and it circled around and came back and landed on stage right on my finger. And the manager of the restaurant, who would see me week after week, came running over after the show and, "Oh, I love that new trick. That is the greatest."
Do that every week.
I didn't have the heart to tell him. It was pure luck. But
it wasn't like Amos Lefkovich's doves. It would always come back to him. Yeah,
that's right. Yeah, yeah. That, in fact, I think that was in the days before Lance Burton made that so popular. And
mm-hmm. Training your doves.
And
it's interesting, too, about the school shows then versus now, that students, college students in particular, would sit to watch. I don't know, I may be wrong about this and may get emails, but I can't really see that a Chavez-style act strictly in and of and by itself would hold the attention of college students today. I mean, I've seen Levent, who does a lot of really funny and great stuff, and then he'll do a serious bit, Chavez style or something with rings or, some beautiful piece, and then he'll, after the music, cut out and do something that's more bizarre and everything that is great. So I think if you put it in sandwich a Chavez type act within the context of an overarching show that has other illusions or fun or laughter or mentalism or something, I think that might go over better. But would you agree that it's harder to do that kind of show today?
I would think so too. Yes, I don't work the college market, but if I did, I would feel very uneasy going on just with a standard manip act. I for college kids, it seems to me they like the extreme stuff and the physical stuff and, you know, some danger and that kind of thing. And,
right.
You know, more hip style act. But I think there might be a place to say, you know, now when I started out, I always, you know, dreamt of doing magic of this style, or one of my mentors did this style of magic. And if you don't mind, let's just have, you know, for 3 minutes, I'd like to show you an example of that. And, you know, just do a quick little minip act or something like that might work.
Right, right. I think you got a good point there. So it sounds like that you've been using animals of one sort or another pretty much for most of your magic career.
Pretty much, yeah. Yes, ever. Like I said, with the birds starting in high school, and then shortly after marriage, we the bunny rabbits. So rabbits for over 30 years now.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned a restaurant. You alluded to that a moment ago where the manager would come back in and say, can you do that every week? But so you actually were using doves in a restaurant where people were eating.
Yes, yes. And don't know if there was any rules or regulations we were in violation of. But,
yeah.
But the manager didn't care, so we did it. I can recall entertaining at a country club maybe 15 years ago in Florida, and it was like a dinner that they were having for the families, and I walked in with a rabbit in a cage, and they told me, you know, you could not use the rabbit due to the fact that it was a restaurant as well. But that was a rarity. I have a country club here where I, near Springfield, Missouri, where I live, and I've been booked there 10 years in a row for a special dinner, and I've never heard one word about the bunny rabbit.
Well, the rabbit's not going to be hopping off necessarily or scurrying under the tables or feet of people or up on their tables either, I would.
Right, right.
Whereas a dove might have more dove dust or land over in their plate, as you said, come skidding to halt for the guy's steak dinner or something, you know.
Yeah, I heard a story about a magician using a dove at a birthday party, and the dove got away and flew around, and it landed smack dab right on the birthday cake.
Oh, my.
With flapping wings, and, yeah, I mean, it just totally ruined the birthday cake. So
Hadn't thought about that. There are
problems
with that. Well, speaking of that, you know, that I mentioned I, too, had used doves, but also used a rabbit, little dwarf rabbit that was named Thurston, and I used him in my birthday parties and I would always hold him. I wouldn't put the rabbit in the children's hands. I would hold it and, you know, let them pet it until one day, whenever I was feeding the rabbit at home, that it bit me, and I still got a scar on my finger, and so that was the last time I ever took it to a show. I thought, well, if it did it to me, that it may to another child to feel territorial or something. So do you ever have problems, issues, or?
You know, sometimes I would never let a child hold the rabbit. I was always afraid the rabbit might kick and scratch a child or something. Sometimes when I would hold the bunny rabbit, I would find it would start to squirm, and sometimes I might get scratched a little bit. And then the obvious answer was, just for me at least, was to put the rabbit into my top hat. After the show, I would use a different trick to produce the rabbit, but then I would just bring a top hat for that specific reason, put the rabbit into the top hat, and it just pokes its head up and maybe holds on with its front paws, and it looks really cute sitting in the hat. And then I can go around the room with the rabbit in the hat, and my hand is on top of the rabbit, keeping it secure in the hat, and the kids just pet the rabbit, you know, behind the ears or whatever, and I always give them very specific instructions that I will come up to you one by one. We don't want to have four or five children trying to pet the rabbit at once. It's just, I will come to you, and when I come to you, just pet her very gently on top of the head like this. And with the rabbit in the head, it makes a great photo op too as well.
Right.
And so that's worked real well for me. But I always either have the children line up and I come down the line and one by one, or I go up to the children and one by one pet the rabbit, and just for a few seconds each child. And if I see if they get too excited and three or four kids try to pet her, I immediately back away with the rabbit and say, okay, now I've told you one time, now please remember, only one by one, please take your, wait for your turn. And I've had pretty good luck with that. I do really try to make sure the rabbit that I use has a really good disposition. I've had a couple in the past that were just too wild acting, and I had to, you know, take them back to the breeder and get a different rabbit then.
What kind of a rabbit do you recommend?
And generally I get a Netherland dwarf rabbit as well. I have one that's right now that's actually a mixed breed. It's Netherland and dwarf and a little bit of a Hoto. I think it's spelled H-O-T-O-T. And that rabbit has the dark eyes with like a black ring around their eye. That's real pretty.
Do they have the black speckling also?
Some, yes. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
Gotcha. Well, it would seem that, of course, the rabbit would be comfortable in that hat. So it's in its kind of environment. See,
right.
I think the reason that mine had bitten me is that I had reached inside the cage to feed it. And whenever I did, that was when he would attack me because he felt territorial, like I was eating.
Right.
But I think if they're kind of comfortable, you know, in something. So do you train your rabbit then to stay in the hat?
Yeah, I try to start working with them early on when they're quite young and getting them used to the hat. And they do, you're right, they do seem to feel comfortable when they're a little more confined like that, you know. And
mm-hmm.
Rabbit nests, of course, are very tiny, and so they're really used to being kind of confined like that. And
in tight spaces, yeah.
You know, so, and but starting them at an early age and kind of seeing how their disposition is going to be. I usually, when I buy a rabbit, I buy a rabbit from a pet store just because they've kind of gotten used to people coming into the store and petting them. And whereas I had a rabbit one time from a breeder who probably had 100 small cages with 100 rabbits, and you know, they had no interaction with humans at all. And that was one of the wildest rabbits I ever had. And had to return that rabbit.
Well, that's a pretty good tip. Yeah, I hadn't thought about that. If you're having one that has never had human handling before, and then you purchase that rabbit, that you're the first one really to start working with it, and it may already have some inbred feelings, I guess, you know, against human touch or something. Whereas, I guess, if others who see people coming into the pet store all the time, you pay a little bit more, I guess, at the pet store than you would from the breeder, but it'd be worth it for sure.
Right. Yes. I had the one from the breeder. It was just like you put your hand in the cage and the thing would go crazy and try to bite me or scratch me. I would actually have to put on a pair of gloves just to take the rabbit out of the cage.
Wow.
And once I got it out of the cage and used it in the show, it wasn't terrible, but it was just getting it in and out of the cage. Like I said, I would have to wear gloves to do that.
Right. Well, I was mentioning earlier also about the restaurants and having a permit. And so you said you didn't have to have a permit or anything for that. But then, because I think it may have to do with city codes, and it could be from state to state, county to county, and city to city, as to whether or not that they would allow you to bring doves or rabbits or something into the restaurant. I got away from that so long ago, and I wouldn't consider doing that. And so I use like a rubber dove now. It's kind of a comedy gag, you know, kind of a thing. Have you since purchased or have a permit for any of your animals?
Oh, yes. Actually, I have a federal license for my rabbit, which I was not aware that I even needed such a license. I figured if I was Kirby Van Burchen Branson with white tigers, I might need a permit. But actually I was actually performing at a library show back in 2005, and after the show an inspector who was in the audience came up to me and threw a badge in my face and demanded to see my license.
Wow.
And I was like, license for, and she says, for your bunny rabbit. And
you didn't
and
think she was serious, probably.
she had actually the library. It was just in a small town here in Missouri. The library had run an ad saying, come see Marty the Magician tomorrow at the library. And in the ad, they ran a picture of me holding a rabbit. And this inspector happened to live in this small town and saw the ad in the newspaper and decided she would come undercover to my show and bust me at the show right after the show.
Wow.
Not having a rabbit license.
And so once you said, no, I don't have a license, then they said you're in violation, and...
Yes, I just played, you know, stupid. In fact, I said to her, I said the exact words I said to her was what I just said to you a moment ago. I said, well, I can understand if I was in Branson and I was Kirby Van Burch and had six white tigers, and she said, you're no different than he is, and she's like pointing her finger at me and screaming.
Wow.
And this is in front of, like, moms and kids that I was trying to sign autographs and shake hands, and this lady, you know, just comes in... interrupts my meet and greet session and gets in my face like this, you know, and so she said, you're no different than he is. And I said, one rabbit is no different than six tigers. And she said, no, you need the exact same license. And she said, so from this day on, you will not be allowed to use your rabbit. You need to fill out paperwork and you'll have to apply, you know, you'll have to apply for a license and pay $40. You'll have to take your rabbit to a vet and you have paperwork that your vet has to fill out. And then we need to come to your home and inspect your home also.
Now, this was, you said, in the summer of 2005?
Yes, uh-huh.
Okay, so this was some years back in which that then you had. Now, is that going to be like per animal? Let's say that you had a half dozen rabbits and you were using doves and everything. Would that be $40 per, or how?
It would be, the license, the license fee depends on how many animals. I believe it's like, you know, like up to two animals is one price, and then it goes like from three to five.
Ah, yeah.
And now doves are not covered under the license. This is just for mammals. So my rule book from the USDA has a picture of an orca whale, a tiger, a lion, a rabbit, a gerbil, a guinea pig, a dog, and a cat. So those are all the same. A whale and a tiger and a guinea pig all have the same license.
So it's kind of, that is pretty funny. All mammals, I guess. We had a porpoise. Would that be right? It'd be a mammal, wouldn't it?
So. I guess so, yeah.
A whale, yeah. So this, again, was 2005, and so you applied online, I guess, at the time and got the permit you needed, or how did you go about, how does one go about permitting if they need to do this?
Yeah, they actually, back then, they put a little bit more of it online, but she actually handed me the physical papers, and I had a hand fill them out and then mail them to their office in Colorado and wait about 3 weeks to a month and got my license back saying that I'd been approved so far, but then they said we still need to do your inspection at your home. So and it's a surprise inspection, so they don't want to call and say you were coming and then you clean the cage up real quick and make everything look real super nice. So
sure, just like you're a foster parent for a human child.
Yeah. The funny thing is, I talking to some folks that have children or that are under suspicion of child abuse or whatever, they actually will call you and tell you when they're coming out to your house. So the rabbit gets a surprise inspection, but the kid does not.
the rabbit's actually
better protected than a child.
Wow.
So they come to the house and they need to check the temperature of the house, the weight of the rabbit depends on how many cubic inches the cage has to be, where you store the food, the cleanliness of the food, the water, all these kinds of things are checking.
Wow. Now, is this also for a national or is this for a state?
This is actually a federal rule.
It's
administered by the U.S. Department of Agriculture. It's called the Animal Welfare Act. And that act was, I think, signed into law back in the 1960s. It was originally designed because someone had a dog that was kidnapped and it was stolen, and it was used in a research lab.
Mm-hmm.
So they passed rules to protect animals used in research, and then they did an update around 1970 to expand the rule to circuses and zoos that have, exotic animals. And And I don't know if it's because circuses have been put out of business and inspectors need more work, but it happened to me, and I started hearing some other reports from other magicians in the early 2000s that the inspectors were even dropping down to going after people that had just like one bunny rabbit.
Wow. I guess that kind of expands the government's reach into any and everybody's home, at that point. I had many years ago, and this was again back in the early 80s, I guess, when I was using doves, and I had a letter from Bill Larson, president of the Academy of Magical Arts at the time, and saying that there was someone who had filed a complaint against a magician who was touring on the Azure Seas named Great Scott, who was mistreating his doves, and wanted to know if I was that Great Scott, because that was the moniker I went by at the time. And I wrote back and sent him my picture, and I said, that's not me. I've never been on the Azure Seas. That's somebody else. And he wrote back. He said, okay, that's fine. Perhaps it might be somebody here in California or whatever. I mean, Great Scott was a common name. And way back then, I was doing a lot of more birthday parties, and they said I had doves and rabbits and whatnot as well. The point was that apparently that someone who was on this particular cruise had seen the conditions that this Great Scott was treating, how was treating his doves in the small boxes or whatever they're putting them in and storing them, or in the room, and they were dirty or whatever in bad conditions. So the SPCA was going to be pressing some sort of a lawsuit against this this individual. So I know it's been, I guess maybe that was before the USDA had gotten involved, that it was the SPCA who may have been pushing the USDA. I don't know, but.
Right. Yeah, and I certainly, I don't really enjoy having inspectors coming to my house just whenever they want, and
knocking
on my door, and I have to let them in. And but that is the only one of the only good things about being inspected, that if I do have anyone that comes up after a show and they're concerned about me using a rabbit in a show, mm-hmm. or whatever, I'd simply say, well, I am certified and licensed by the USDA. If you have any questions, here's my inspector's phone number, call them. And that gets them off my back then.
Okay, so let's kind of fast forward. And so that was 2005, and so each year you continue to re-permit and take
right.
it to the vet and do all of that. And then along about July of 2013, then you get a letter.
Right, I get a letter. I got an envelope from the USDA, and I thought it's kind of early for them to be sending my license renewal paperwork. This uh-huh. is only the end of June. It's normally in the fall, so I just left it lay on my desk for a couple of days, and finally on a Thursday night, I opened the letter, and it's an 8-page letter and instructions saying that to keep my license, they have now added a new requirement, and I now need to have a written disaster plan in place for my rabbit.
Wow.
Everything needing what I would do in case of a fire, flood, tornado, ice storm, hurricane, you name it. How am I going to care for this rabbit to get it through a disaster? What I'll do with it after the disaster? What happens if the tornado kills myself? Where will the rabbit go? I mean, just
wow.
There were five major areas that had to be covered in the disaster plan, and each area had anywhere from 6 to 20 bullet points after it on things that had to be covered in this disaster plan.
Now, what did you think whenever you got this? I mean, did you?
I quickly read the letter and just threw it down, kind of laughing, and then I did went on to do something else, and then I thought, wait a minute, did I just read what I thought I read? This was on Thursday night. I'd been doing libraries every day that entire week, and I was just getting ready to go out of state on Friday to do more libraries. And so I reread the letter, and I said, I cannot believe this. And so I showed it to my wife, Brenda, and I said, this sounds like they're serious, and this thing needs to be done by July 29th, and this is like the end of June, so I only have like a month to get this put together.
Mm-hmm.
Or I'll be in violation of law, and
they would be coming after you potentially.
They'll be coming after me, right?
Now, what do they do? I mean, if you didn't, would they just take the rabbit from you? They put you in jail? They fine
no,
you?
No, they would give me a written warning, and then if I did not do it on the second inspection, then I could keep the rabbit, but I would not be allowed to use it in the show, and then there'd mm-hmm. be monetary fines, and ultimately it could be jail time.
Now, what was your next step? Did you start filling this out? Did you go to an attorney?
No, my next step was to put it on Facebook, because whenever I have a rabbit inspection, or people just think this rabbit story is funny. About 4 years ago, the association called Kadabra, the Kid Show Association, they mm-hmm. published a journal, and they did a big story on myself and two other magicians about the rabbit police. And in fact, yeah, a conservative blogger somehow heard about the story, and he enjoyed it, and it actually made it to the Rush Limbaugh show like 3 years ago.
Hmm.
A guest host by the name of Mark Stein did a few minutes about the rabbit inspectors. This was like back in 2010, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And so I knew there was some interest out there, so I put a post on Facebook on Thursday night about I need to write a disaster plan for the rabbit. On Friday, I drove to do my library show, and I checked a couple times during the day my Facebook, and I was just getting a tremendous amount of reaction, and by the Friday evening it was, I had almost 200 posts about how funny this was.
Yeah, what kind of comments? I mean, what did people say?
Just people saying, how idiotic it is, they can't believe it, how this is ridiculous. I mean, there was nobody that said, well, they've got a point, so.
All right.
And then the conservative blogger that had originally loved the first story a few years ago, I thought, he probably should know about this. So I sent it to Bob. His name's Bob McCarty. I sent it to him, and I had no idea how well-connected Bob McCarty was. And on Saturday, the story through Facebook just took off and went viral, and it started showing up everywhere.
Wow. I mean, people were sharing that story on
there? People were sharing it, and it went to a conservative guy named Anthony Watts, who's pretty well read, and it went from him to another guy who talked about it, and another guy, and then finally it made it to Mark Stein, who's not only a guest host on Rush Limbaugh, but writes for National Review, so he did a thing about it on Saturday. You know, Friday night's not a good night to break a news story.
Right.
But it was, I mean, it just took that rule and stood it on its head. I mean, and then by Saturday night, it had made Glenn Beck the Blaze, and I went to theblaze.com, and it was trending. They said stories that are trending. It says Magician Must Write Disaster Plan, and mm-hmm. and then I went back to Glenn Beck's stuff site about an hour later, and it was actually front and center on their homepage,
wow.
the featured story. And they actually had gone to my YouTube channel and pulled video of me performing with my rabbit. So mm-hmm. they put the video up, too, as well. So that was on so Saturday it just exploded. Sunday morning I woke up and got a call from a friend of mine saying, you're on national television right now. I said, what? And I was on the weekend edition of Fox and Friends, and they kept using my story to tease, coming up next hour, does this magician look dangerous to you? And they're running video
uh-huh, yeah.
with this rabbit, and they did two segments plus lots of teasers, so it was a total of about 8 minutes on that Sunday morning. On
this was all without even talking with you. They just
no one told me, no one called me. They just went to my YouTube channel, got video off of that, and all they were going by was just what Bob McCarty had posted, and I had sent the 8-page letter to Bob McCarty, the PDF of that, so they mm-hmm. all had that letter too, and so that was crazy.
And then how did John Stossel pick this up? Because that's
and then like... well, so then I think after Fox and Friends, I got calls from a couple local stations, radio stations, and that had heard about it. And then our local TV station here in Springfield, an ABC affiliate, did a local story on it. And I thought it was just going to air in Springfield. And she said, "Oh no," she says, "we'll package this up and send it to CNN. They'll distribute it all over the country." And sure enough, a few hours later, CNN called me and for legal release to use my video.
Right.
And so it was. I heard from Al Leone in Hawaii. He saw it in Hawaii. I heard from my aunt in Ohio. I heard from people in Texas, all over the place. And after that, the very next day, the Washington Post called, and they have a reporter that specializes on weird government rules or whatever, and so I told him a little bit about the story, and he said, "Oh, this is so good. I'm going to fly to your home,
wow,
and go to your show with you."
Uh-huh.
And this is on a Monday afternoon. Wednesday night he comes to Branson. Thursday he met with Brendan and myself at our home and went to a show at a daycare center and hired a photographer to come in as well, and so he said, "We're working on this story, and it'll be in the paper in about a week or so." So, well, now this time I my phone rings and I look, and the caller ID says USDA Washington D.C.
Mm-hmm.
So I know this is not my local inspector calling.
Right.
So I'm a little kind of worried. Who's this? What's this about? And I answer the phone, and the lady says she's the supervisor over all the inspectors, and she says, "I understand you have some concerns." And I said, "Well, yeah, I do have a few concerns," and I told her what my concerns were, and she tried to empathize with me, but her answer was always, "But it's the law, and if you don't do it, we will cite you." That was her response to every concern
sure.
I had. And then I said, "Before we go, I just want you to know, I wasn't going after you people, and I'm not gunning for you. I said, I just put a funny little post on Facebook, and it just took off out of my hands, and I didn't orchestrate this. I had no idea this had happened." And she said, "Oh, it doesn't bother us in the least." She said, "People attack the USDA all the time, and this publicity doesn't bother us in the least." And I'm thinking to myself, "Well, you're the one that called me, lady."
Right. It must have bothered you enough at your level to have contacted me from my one rabbit out of a whole country.
And then I'm also thinking to myself, too, I'm saying, "And lady, you have no idea, but about 2 hours ago, a Washington Post reporter just left my home, and you have no idea what's going
to
happen."
Yeah, it's about to really explode.
And so, sure enough, about a week later, on July 18th, it made the Washington Post. And I called a friend of mine in that area. I said, "They bury this story. Where is it? Like on page, C14 or where?"
Yeah.
"No, Marty, you're on the B front page." I go, in the front of A, B, no, the front page. I said, oh, wow. No.
The top so, story.
Yeah, and it was, in fact, they put the story online the night before it ran in the paper, and within 3 hours, the top man, the Secretary of Agriculture, was already commenting that he was calling for a review. He didn't even know about this, and he was. And the reporter told me off the record, he said that Secretary is really angry at these people that passed this rule, and that he didn't even really know about it, and he's very embarrassed about it.
Mm-hmm. Well, it just shows about how far and how deep some of these things go that were unintended in the initial lawmaking, I guess.
Yes, yes, yeah. When they proposed this law, it was kind of after Hurricane Katrina, mm-hmm. and I mean, I can understand
all the dogs and their cats and all that.
Right. You know, and I think, if you're a zoo and you have exotic animals, you should probably know what you're going to do if a tornado,
sure.
you know, hits your zoo. If a rabbit escapes, probably not that big of a deal.
Right.
But they took public comment on that rule, and they took 997 public comments, and 50 were in favor, 947 were against, and they still passed the rule anyhow, and it took like 7 years to write, and then in 3 hours after the Washington Post story, they were shutting it down.
Oh, wow.
So that was, and so they called for a review, and so they formally issued a stay in this rule. And so this has been, you know, several months, and we have no idea how long it's going to take them to rewrite the rule, if they're even going to rewrite it, if they're just going to sweep it under the rug and hope it goes away and not even come back to that, we don't know.
Do you think that has to do then just with the individual like this? I mean, obviously the law must still apply to disaster plans for other kinds of animals or zoos, like you said, or whatever.
That's the crazy thing about it. It's with the USDA, it's all or nothing. They have shut down the disaster plan requirement for everyone.
Wow.
Circuses, zoos. I mean, common sense, you would think they would say, okay, if you only have
let's just tighten it up a little
one bit. Animal or if it's an animal below 20 pounds or, mm-hmm. you know, or some kind of a rule they could come up with that you're exempt. But no, it's either everybody does it or no one does it. So right now, no one does it.
So the law is in suspense, basically.
Yes.
Uh-huh. And yeah. No one has to complete this kind of a form currently.
Right, right. In fact, the supervisor of all the inspectors, I had heard a rumor they were going to issue a stay in this rule. The reporter had heard a rumor of this and told me, and so I called her number, which I'd gotten off of caller ID, and of course she would not answer my calls.
Yes.
I thought, oh, the lady who called me to harass me, and I was afraid to take my call. And then the next day, like one of the very top people at the USDA called me at home and said, yes, you are correct. We are issuing a stay today, and you do not have to do the disaster plan until further notice.
Hmm.
And they actually changed the Federal Register.
Wow. So you fought the law and you won.
Yes. In fact, I got several calls from magicians who said, turn on C-SPAN. And it wasn't my congresswoman, but a Missouri congresswoman, Vicki Hartzler, was actually on the floor of the House in Washington, D.C., with a picture of a rabbit in a hat talking about my situation. So
mm-hmm.
One of the few magicians ever be spoken about on the floor of the House, I believe.
Wow, that's pretty impressive. Wow. Well, I would think that it would be just fodder for the journalists to come up with these kinds of, funny titles, headlines, and everything.
Oh,
like
yeah,
this.
Yeah. Yeah, watch him pull a rabbit out of a hat and, you know, in case of fire, do not take elevator, put rabbit in a hat and go downstairs, you know, those all kinds of things. And
yeah.
Now, once the Washington Post story ran, it's similar to the AP. That story got distributed across the country, and I mean, I was hearing from people everywhere that had seen it and just numerous radio interviews and people like Jim Bohannon, who's on like 500 stations. And, you know, so then finally the Fox people over at Stossel's show heard about it and invited me to come to New York for an interview. And actually, it wasn't the normal John Stossel show. It was actually a special called The War on the Little Guy. And so myself and six or seven other people were featured on the show.
What are the kinds of things were these other people doing when they were
little
guys?
People that weren't a man that had hundreds of acres that he wanted to build a subdivision on and wasn't allowed to because of some rare frog that had been there 40 years ago. And had left, but there's still a chance 40 years later that it might still come back. So you have to lose millions of dollars because of this one frog that might come back.
And that kind of a thing. Those different
stories like that, yeah.
Uh-huh,
yeah.
Uh-huh. And so that got some resonance, obviously. I guess was that replayed a few times?
Or? Yeah. In fact, they were using that's my story. I think it just has a lot of appeal to people, and it's so funny that, you know, Stossel was on several news shows promoting the special, and I was the guy that they were talking about, you know, to tease the show, and they had me lead the show off with my story, and then they also had me come back at the end of the story to finish it up. So that was really fun, and they, I think, have rerun it like 8 or 9 times. So.
Well, now I assume that you still have to have permits and go through with what you were doing before, as far as filing the $40 and getting it inspected by the vet, and you still have people coming to your homes.
Now the funny thing is, they, looking at my paperwork, they were like clockwork every year coming to my home in the fall, and you know, this all started late summer, early fall, and they're like 6 months overdue on inspecting me at my home. So I've got my new license, but I've not been inspected now for, like I said, it's been almost a year and a half. It should be every year I get inspected. So I don't know. I don't know if they're afraid of me or what, but
I would have thought just the opposite. It's kind of like that, you know, your tax records would be audited or something.
See, right. When this all started, I have jokingly, more seriously said, well, I'm going to be audited. They're going to come after me every way they can now. And they'll be inspecting me all the time because, I mean, law says they can inspect me whenever they want. And,
sure.
And instead they just like totally backed away from me, it seems like.
Hmm.
And I need to check with those. There's been a few other magicians that I've known of that have had USDA inspectors, and I don't know if it's a thing that they're backing off on all magicians now and going back to worrying about zoos and circuses and illegal puppy mills and that kind of thing or not.
So the main thing, I guess, that you'd kind of recommend still for other magicians is not necessarily, obviously, to worry about this since there's been a stay of this law, but they do need to check about getting permits, getting proper inoculations for your rabbits or doves and cleaning them and everything.
Yeah, and I mean, it's even without the rules and regulations, I was always, you know, really good about taking great care of my animals. I mean, I love animals, and I mean, I have 3 shelter cats that I've spent thousands of dollars on nursing them back to health, and I mean, I just love animals. So, and if you're out in the public with an animal, I mean, you're in close quarters at a birthday party, and I mean, if it's a rabbit that's in your show, you really need to take good care of it and have it really looking tip-top, you know?
Right. I talked with Nicholas St. Ern, who is a veterinarian and of some renown worldwide, and he spoke with me about the importance of getting these inoculations and the kinds of diseases that humans can get from their magic animals, whether they're doves, rabbits, tigers, whatever there happen to be. But it's important to keep their shots up, basically.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right.
I wanted to ask you, though, further about the publicity that you did receive. Obviously, that it went viral starting with Facebook, which is kind of interesting about how social media had moved this to the point that it actually changed the law. You had received a lot of publicity then, radio, television, and online and the newspapers, et cetera. Did you find that this created not only a buzz about you, but also others who said, I'd like to see his show and I want to book him? Did you see any kind of a bump?
It's funny. I haven't seen that much of a bump in actual direct bookings where people heard about me and say, let's call and get this guy. In fact, that I thought it might almost, could almost hurt me in some markets. I wasn't positive could hurt me, but I thought, you know, it's mostly conservative types that have really jumped on this story. And so if I had somebody that was liberal, they may think, I don't really want to use this magician anymore, you know, or something. So I was afraid it may backfire on me with schools and libraries and whatnot. It hasn't really backfired. In my markets, it hasn't helped. But what I have found, it's helped me tremendously with the search engine optimization and with my results in Google. There's a few Marty the Magicians out there, and now all these stories were referring to me as Marty the Magician, and it's just, you type in Marty the Magician, it just goes page after page after page after page.
Right.
And so all my Google results, I'm always at the top of in results on Google. If you type in Marty Hahn Magician, Marty the Magician, you know, Magician in Missouri, I mean, I'm coming up number one everywhere in Google.
And it's not necessarily taking them to your website. It could be taking them to stories about it, this.
Right. But luckily, the top one or two results are always to my website. And a lot of these stories put in a hot link to my website, which was nice.
Mm-hmm.
Like the Washington Post story, and, you know, it would say, Marty the Magician got a letter, and the Marty the Magician would have a highlight, and if you click it, it went right to my website.
Right. But you said you really haven't seen an uptick in bookings necessarily that you can go back and relate
to. Not that I
can
really trace to the story. Now, some people are suggesting that there may be a story there that I could take this whole experience about, you know, taking on the big guy and winning and turn it into some kind of a motivational speech. So maybe a whole new career that, you know, as a speaker or whatever that I could use this for.
Well, that was kind of where I was going to be going ultimately as well, is saying that this is something that can have some wider applications, I guess, that would be for the little guy, you know, fighting City Hall kind of a thing. And it's not necessarily trying to do just that and trying to get an uprising and get people to, you know, follow your parade, but basically just standing up for themselves, regardless of whatever that is, even against bullying, you know, that you need to stand up. I mean, this can have, you know, a relationship even to children, you know.
Right, because I actually do a bully prevention show for my elementary schools, and then one day I woke up and realized the government was kind of bullying me as well,
so
I had to stand up to them, so. And then there could all be a whole thing about fear and conquering your fears. And when this whole thing started, you know, I called one person to get their opinion on it, and I probably called the wrong person. And they're like, "Oh, you better be quiet and hope this goes away. You're going to be audited. You're going to be attacked, and this is terrible." You know. And so then they already had some fear about this happening so quickly and just out of control. And then he just made my fears even worse. And
yeah.
Then I thought, you know, maybe I should call for advice people that have actually been in the same situation. So I called a few other people that have done television and have had some controversial things, and called them and got their take on it, which was totally the opposite. You know, run with it. You know, be blessed that you've got this publicity. It's been dropped into your lap, and you need to go with it. So.
Well, the amazing thing is that, again, that this was almost a year ago. I mean, again, it was in July of 2013. Here we are right now as we're recording this into March 2014. And I understand that there is yet another article. It's going to be in the Reader's Digest coming soon.
Right. It just hit the newsstands last week, the April edition of the Reader's Digest. So it's under I think it's a story about dumb politicians or something as angle or whatever, and I'm one of like four people mentioned in that story.
Did they just pick up some of the information from stories and reported already, or did they talk with you about this?
I had no idea it was even out there. My sister just happened to see it and call me. I didn't know it was going to run. They referenced a website in the story, which was one that I hadn't seen. I mean, there were over 8,000 results on Google. I looked at quite a few of them, but one that I had not seen. It's pretty much the same story I've heard, you know, other places. Everybody's pretty much telling the same story with just slight changes. So, yeah, here it is almost a year later, and we're in the Reader's Digest. Now, coming up in May, the very first week of May, is the International Battle of Magicians in Canton, Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm delighted I'll be doing a multimedia presentation about it over there at that conference. So we're going to have some of the funny audio files and video files and I'll tell the story in a few. I've got quite a few more things to tell about the story, so that'll be coming up in Canton, Ohio, that May 1, 2, and 3 at the International Battle.
And I believe they can go to the website.
Right, I think it's Battle of Magicians, maybe.
.com? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, you can do a Google search if that's not it, but I believe that's it then also. Yeah, and so this will be the first time, I guess, at a convention. I know that you're a dealer also as well, and appear at different conventions around the country, but this will be the first time you'll actually lecture on this issue, I assume?
You know what? I actually put a PowerPoint presentation together for back last fall. I was at a conference for a marketing conference for magicians, and they said, hey, if you guys speaking of marketing and publicity, look what this guy's had happened. So they had me get up, and I did about just a 15-minute version with a PowerPoint presentation, and that went over extremely well. So I decided to expand it, and I can have some of the fossil footage and other things as well.
Right.
It'd probably be closer to 30 to 40 minute presentation.
I'm going to link a couple of those things on the blog at themagicwordpodcast.com. So if people want to go and look at that, then they can. But as you said, there are thousands, I guess, out there that you can go and find, and several on YouTube videos.
Oh, yes, right. Yeah, you just type in Marty the Magician, or if you type in Google Rabbit Disaster Plan. You type in Rabbit Disaster Plan, you'll get a ton of stuff. In fact, I just recently bought that domain name, which I'm still putting the site together. It's just barely even up right now, but Rabbit Disaster Plan.
.com. Wow. Okay. That is pretty funny. So people will be going, but you really won't need a disaster plan. As I said, it sounds
like. And that's the thing. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the funny thing was the rule was the disaster plan had to be done by, I think it was July 29th, and they issued the stay on July 30th. So they made sure everybody, actually they issued the stay at 5 o'clock on July 29th. So almost like they want everyone to get their disaster plan's done, and then they issue the stay that you don't need it.
Wow. Now, did you complete that yourself? Do you have to go through an attorney?
That's a funny thing. When this story broke, an emergency management expert heard the story, and she called me from Cleveland, Ohio, and said, "This is the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard." She said, "I've written plans for the military, for FEMA, even for USDA." She said, "I'm going to write you a plan free of charge."
Mm-hmm.
And she said, "Do you want me to do something quick like 8 pages, or do you want me to make a point?" And you know what my answer was. So a week later, I had a 32-page disaster plan.
Right, yeah, completely fleshed out and going way beyond whatever was necessary to make sure that nothing was left unturned or unanswered.
That's exactly right, yeah. She analyzed every disaster in my county from 1950 until today, where the nearest dams are, the nearest waterways, how many tornadoes we've had, how many ice storms. I mean, she has all these charts and graphs, and they can see that disaster plan on the online at the Washington. If they find the Washington Post story, they actually have the disaster plan as well.
I'll have a link to that on my blog as well, so that way you can click on that to see that. So that will open up and show all those pages. Wow, incredible! So, what have you learned in all of this?
One thing I've learned is don't think that you're too little and you're in such a remote area that they're not going to catch you. It's amazing, you know. I mean, I just thought I'm a low-level magician with one rabbit. You know, who's ever going to bother me?
Mm-hmm.
And so that was one thing I learned. So, but I also learned that it's with the internet, with social media, that's the new sheriff in town. And I mean, when this all started, some of my friends, magician friends, thought it was funny, and they saw, well, they're not going to. This story's not going to last more than a week or two. And I know. And then it kept going. And then they said, well, you're not going to change the rule. And they were wrong on that as well. So,
yeah.
So it's amazing how your voice can be heard as far away as Washington, D.C., you know, thanks to the way things work with social media and stories going viral. It's just unbelievable
right.
How quickly it all happened. I mean, this was from a funny post on a Thursday night to exploding on Saturday to Washington Post calling me on Monday. I mean, it's just, I could not believe how fast things happen nowadays.
Wow. And it was still kind of unintentional from the standpoint, again, that you had posted that just as here's a funny story
or
something had happened. And then by having all the friends in your circle there on Facebook who would jump in and one thing just kind of led to another. Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah. It's just, the speed is the thing that I just couldn't get my head around how, you know, just putting a funny post up on a Thursday night and by Sunday just being on national television was just hard to believe how fast things happen.
Now, you didn't use Twitter. This was Facebook. Are you on Twitter? Or
I'm on Twitter, but for whatever reason, I just haven't really done much with Twitter. That's one of the things I need to work on, I think.
Mm-hmm. Well, it sounds like Facebook works for you.
Yeah. And friends of mine that were on Twitter were saying, oh, you wouldn't believe what's happening on Twitter, too. And they would type it into Twitter, and it's just like, oh, man, look at that, you know.
Mm-hmm. That's very funny. Well, listen, this has been just quite interesting in a background that you've been talking about that's happened over here to you. And I know this is going to be a further discussion, and people can ask you direct questions and some more stories that you'll share there at the Canton International Battle of Magicians. May that's the 1st through the 3rd. Is that right?
Right. May 1 through 3. And again, the website is battleofmagicians.com.
Okay.
And my program will be on Friday evening. So Hope to see a lot of my friends and make some new friends there as well.
Yeah. And the title of my podcast is called The Magic Word. So, Marty, I'll ask you then, what is your magic word or phrase or something that you live by, something that's important? It doesn't need to necessarily be like abracadabra or something that you use in the context of a show or something, but what's something that is important to you? What's your magic word?
I tell you what, every time I do a show, I give 100%, and it doesn't matter how important the show is or how minor you think the show is, every show is important. You never know when you're going to touch somebody. You never know. I mean, I remember doing a show at a country club, just a routine Halloween show, and here it was the year of 9/11, and after the show I got this letter from a lady saying that her sister was killed in 9/11, and she said she and her daughter came to my magic show, and it was the first time they had laughed in over a month.
Wow.
And, you know, and here I was going and thinking, you know, it's just one of my, I have three shows today, I'll just zip in, do these shows. I mean, I was going to do a good job.
Sure.
Always do a good job, but just a routine show. And here that show, you know, had a major impact on a lady, made her smile for the first time in a month. And so I remember that. And every show you go out, you give 100%, and you remember, you know, you never know when your last show is going to be, when it's going to, what can happen. So, you know, I want my last show to be my very best show. So every show has to be the best show.
That's a good philosophy.
That's what I live by.
Those are words to live by. That's great. Well, thank you, Marty Hahn. And people, by the way, that wanted to check your website.
Yeah, MartyTheMagician.com, or they can also go to my dealer site, which is another business I have, Magic Dealer, is DazzlingMagic.com.
Okay. Great. Thank you very much. I appreciate your time here today and talking about this important subject, and hopefully it will apply to some other magicians who will also know the importance of making sure that their animals are kept safe, and also, gee, you never know where you're going to be when the government wants to come looking for you.
Well, it was a pleasure. I sure enjoyed speaking with you, Scott. Thanks so much.
It's a pleasure. That was Marty Hahn for the Magic Word Podcast. This is Scotty Allen. During the 2013 IBM convention in Phoenix, Arizona, I had an opportunity to sit down with Dr. Nicholas St. Earn, who is a magician who was residing in Las Vegas, originally from Wichita, Kansas, and worked with Stevens Magic Emporium. But he is very well known as a veterinarian, and he also had a lot of ideas and tips on how that you should care for, handle, and feed your pets, especially if you use them with your performances, whether it's a rabbit or a tiger. So here are some tips from Dr. St. Earn.
Now, David Oliver has had the disease that was caused by dove dust, I guess, or something, and then he had to have a double lung transplant. Was that something that was unheard of, or you were familiar with?
Psittacosis. It's a bacterial infection, Chlamydophila, and it's not very common, but if you do get it and don't get it treated, it can become very severe. It is a treatable disease with antibiotics. Doxycycline will treat it. But unfortunately, a lot of doctors aren't familiar with it coming from birds, so they might think you have pneumonia or some other disease and don't get you the right treatment initially. So then by the time they finally actually make the diagnosis, it can progress to become very serious.
What are some of the symptoms?
Exactly like the flu. So it's coughing, wheezing, shortness of breath, fever, congestion, and many times if you were to have this disease, you would think you just had the flu. And, you know, maybe the flu would get over in a few days or a week, but with this one, without antibiotics, it can progress and keep going. So unfortunately, if a person went to the doctor and they said, oh, you got the flu, and they didn't give you anything because the flu is a virus and there's no treatment, no antibiotics. But with psittacosis, you can put them on antibiotics, you'll clear up very quickly. Without antibiotics, most healthy adults could recover on their own, but if you had other immune disease or anything that was reducing your immunity, it can become very severe, and unfortunately, as what happened to David, had a very severe case of it.
Would he just have flu-like symptoms for a long period of time, and it just can't shake it?
And typically it could persist for weeks to months.
It might be like a walking pneumonia, even.
Exactly.
That's what people think they might have.
Right. So if you are a bird worker, and you do have flu-like symptoms, consider psittacosis, which is a bacterial infection from birds. Any type of bird can carry it. We see it a lot in parrots, but doves can also carry it. So if you are a dove worker, you can also have your birds tested for it. It is an easy disease to test for, and so if you took your birds to a veterinarian, the veterinarian could do a health check on them and do a test on them, make sure that your birds are healthy and not carrying the bacteria, and then that would reduce your risk.
Now, is that something that's passed from one bird to the other, I guess, within
yes.
the same coop, I guess, and, it, and whatnot?
It can be spread between birds. Birds can also develop resistance to it, not really an immunity, but they can get an infection, they can recover, and they can become a persistent carrier, which means they have the bacteria in their system. It's no longer making them sick, but they could pass it on to other birds or even people that they come into contact with.
And then the worst thing can happen is obviously death, but if it's caught kind of towards the end of the period, kind of like with David Oliver, that you end up having to get your lungs replaced.
Yes, and that is a pretty extreme case. However, there have been people who have died from it. But usually the deaths are associated with either elderly people or people that already have other pre-existing conditions. A young, healthy adult would usually not die, but unfortunately, you know, and it can progress.
Now, are there other things, like let's say from rabbits, you know, or other livestock that magicians might use that they should look out for?
Yeah, less commonly, but it can occur. Rabbits can have some bacterial infections. Pasteurilosis is very common in rabbits, which is a bacterial disease that causes sneezing and snuffles, runny nose, and it is, again, treatable.
Like an allergy, basically?
Yeah, more like a runny nose, like a cold, and so they'll get discharge from the eyes, discharge from the nose, maybe some wheezing while they breathe, and that can be treated with antibiotics as well. So for any magician who's listening to this, if you do use animals in your act, make sure you take good care of them, and also make sure you get good veterinary care, because you know they're your partners. They can perhaps be the key to your livelihood, so you want to make sure you take good care of them as well. And if you find a veterinarian that treats exotic pets or birds, you know, they can run routine tests, check them out, make sure they're healthy, and keep them healthy. The other thing that you need to be aware of is also nutrition, because a lot of people don't understand the proper nutrition for pets, and you might think, well, I just give rabbits rabbit pellets and I just give birds some bird seed, but they actually have other nutritional needs, and they need to supplement their diet with vitamins, minerals, and maybe even some fresh greens. So for magicians that travel with their animals, that's a consideration they have to take, is proper care of the pets while they're on the road, and then also at home, giving them the proper diet so that they can live long, healthy lives.
Just as you would your dog, cat, or any other type of animal, I guess, that you would have domestically?
Exactly. I mean, a lot of us grew up, you know, maybe with a dog, and you're feeding it table scraps and things like that, and what we've learned over the years is that proper nutrition can keep them healthier their entire life and have them live longer. So it's not uncommon to Gary Darwin in Las Vegas had a dog that lived for 24 years, and so that's, you know, not real common, but it can happen, and with proper nutrition and proper veterinary care, your pets can live a lot longer.
And as you said, that's your livelihood also, that you're going to be using doves and rabbits, that you need to take care of them. And there are some people, of course, in Vegas and other places that are using the larger animals, wild animals, I guess, and they have a whole set of other types of issues, but I would think that the larger the animal, the more you would want to try to take care of it, but they probably should all be treated the same.
Yeah, they should. One of the things to consider is the larger animals usually come with a bigger expense, and they're expensive to feed, they're expensive to care for, so you have to take that into consideration. So just thinking, well, there's a lot of magicians that use a big cat in the act, I'm going to get one to do that. If you don't plan ahead and realize the thousands of dollars it may take just to feed it, you may not be earning enough money to actually care for the cat.
Right. It seems like I've heard stories about that from time to time, you know, where they haven't, they've had some big animals, but they have not been kept well because they can't afford to do the shows.
Right.
As a result, that the animals are, have to go to some home or they get destroyed.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's a situation we don't want to happen. We don't want magicians to ever get bad publicity, especially for not taking care of them.
What about monkeys? I mean, I don't see magicians ever use monkeys, but I think that'd be
goodness.
The monkeys are funny, you know.
Yeah. When I was in practice in Las Vegas, I did actually take care of a number of show monkeys, and they are dangerous, they're messy, and they actually carry a lot more diseases that humans can catch than other types of animals because they're so closely related.
Yeah.
So there are a number of viruses in monkeys that can kill you.
Wow.
So think twice before getting a monkey.
Unless it's a mechanical one.
Yeah. Those are the best. Yeah. Especially if you can routine the clapping the cymbals into your show.
There you go. That's an easy one. Well, let's go back again to the World Magic Seminar. As I recall...
To hear the entire discussion with Dr. Nicholas St. Ern, be sure to go back to themagicwordpodcast.com and do a search for Nicholas St. Ern or for the IBM Convention 2013 Day 2, and you can hear it all plus more. Thanks again for listening to The Magic Word. This is Scotty out.